Hi, I'm Majora Carter, and welcome back to the Promised Land. So here we are in the nation's capital, across from the White House, and in front of the offices of my old friend Van Jones of the Obama administration, which is very exciting to me and to a whole lot of people who really believe that we can actually create a green economy that's just as good for people, planets, and profits.
Hey, sis. How are you?
Welcome to the White House complex.
Yeah.
18 acres of Obama-rificness. That's the White House itself over there.
I don't know.
Can you see it through the trees?
Yeah. Now, are those protesters or picture-takers?
Yeah, good free speech folks come out here and, you know, they express themselves all the time. And, you know, you see every kind of human. And, I mean, literally, I've been here sometimes at, like, after midnight and come out and seen people out here, like, praying for the president.
No way.
Especially like the first couple of weeks.
Oh,
it was really, you know, it's like the level of just, you know, people are for him. You know, they want him to be successful.
Well, I hear you.
But everybody talks about the East Wing and West Wing. So the East Wing is on the left hand side, the residence is in the middle.
Yeah.
And then the West Wing is on the right there.
Hot dog.
So
have you been there yet?
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. It's not like the TV show. but it's exciting, you know. I still get the goosebumps still.
Wow.
You know?
So Van, you know, it was about almost a year and a half ago when we were sitting in an old monastery up in New York, upstate New York, to talk about the beginning of Green for All.
You know,
which started, and you got a whole bunch of people together to talk about, like, this crazy idea to use the green economy to move people out of poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And here you is, my brother.
life is crazy, you know. At the time, I think it's hard for people to remember, this was really considered an out there idea.
Yeah.
It was very hard for people to imagine that it could actually ever happen, even 20 years, 40 years. And yet, a presidential candidate takes the idea, puts it on the world stage, embraces it, invests billions of dollars into it through the recovery package, and we're off to the races.
So what made you believe that this could really happen?
Well, you know, I think that for me, you know, the reality is that I've seen miracles in real life. You know, I've seen people, individual people, turn their lives around. We talk about the financial recovery for the country. I've seen people go through recovery themselves in their own lives. And when you see, you know, people with very little make those kind of changes in low-income neighborhoods, you know what a rich country can do. You know, you see what a poor individual can do. It shows you what's possible. And so
when did you see, you know, people making their lives with little investment, actually doing something with it?
Well, just working in Oakland, California, working in, you know, Richmond, California, working in some of the tougher neighborhoods where I started putting my hands around coming out of law school, I saw people with, you know, very little, but given a chance, given an opportunity, turning their lives around. Young people who were getting in trouble, who were stealing cars, who were being a menace in the neighborhood, with a little bit of opportunity, a little bit of intervention, then turning around and becoming the neighborhood hero, becoming the neighborhood good guy. And I figured, well, geez, you know, if we could take some of these young people who really want to do better and connect them with something that's going somewhere, then you've got two rockets. You've got the rocket of all these young people who want a better life for themselves, and the rocket of these new technologies that are trying to move the country in a different direction. So I could see it clear as day. It wasn't, to me, it was already done. You know, it wasn't something I had to work myself up to. It just seemed such an obvious fit. And you had the same vision, obviously, on the East Coast. And so you were on the East Coast doing it, and I was on the West Coast doing it. We didn't know each other.
Nope.
Somehow managed to meet somewhere in the middle, I guess.
But now you're working for the Obama administration. And what is exactly your title?
I am the special advisor for green jobs at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. You want to see my office?
Oh, yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah. Since you mentioned it, maybe you get a chance to look at it.
Cool.
It's actually these steps right over here.
Okay.
So that's good. Cool. Hey, Mr. Wilson. Very good to see you, sir. Keeping us safe. We appreciate it. Hello. This is Zach. This is my friend Majora Carter. So, this is my office.
Nice.
And first of all, let me tell you the stuff I like the most in my office.
Tell me.
You walk in, and you got that up there. This is my picture right here.
So you've got Bobby Kennedy. And where is he in this picture?
This is the day before he got killed. He's in Watts.
Wow.
Talking to some of the poorest people in the state. talking to a little African-American boy, and the African-American boy is looking at him with that beautiful smile, and Kennedy is looking at him like he's the most important person in the world. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know he was running for office. You wouldn't know anything else is going on. It's just he's just relating. When I think about what Bobby, you know, stood for, I think about what Obama stands for. You know, 40 years later, because Bobby was killed in 68. Here we are. Obama was elected in 2008. So it took us 40 years to get back to that hope. Everybody matters. Everybody counts. And now it's our turn to turn it into reality.
Here you are in the administration pushing for green jobs, mm-hmm. which makes you a really important person in the green job movement. Mm-hmm. So is this the kind of position you were actually thinking of when you started Green for All?
No, you know, that's the crazy thing, because I didn't ask for the job, I didn't apply, but the work that I had done, that you had done, you know, others had done, had put the term green jobs on the map. And they knew that they wanted to not just talk about it, but do something about it. And so that is what I think led to them creating, for the first time, a position with green jobs in the title. There's never been a position with green jobs in the title in the White House before. And so that was, a big step on their part. And then it was a big step on my part to leave the activism I had been doing and try something new.
Was that hard?
You know, it was hard because I wasn't sure that I wanted to leave Green for All as a new organization. You know, it's very hard to get these organizations started. And if you walk away from them, you know, they sometimes don't survive. But I had a great successor in Phaedra Ellis Lampkins, who was willing to come and move it to the next level. And then the other thing I think was, you know, my mom, talking to her and what it meant to her to have somebody like Barack Obama in the office and to have an opportunity to go and help him. We were talking, kind of going back and forth about it. You know, what do you think I should do? And she goes, well, and I really hope you go serve the president. I said, Mama, why? And she goes, so I can brag.
Really, man, you know, given, you know, that you were Yale educated, did really well, I understand, top of your game, working to get kids in the California juvenile justice system some real justice. Right. And you could have done anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think that, and I think you probably have the same experience as well, is certain doors, when they're open, you don't see any other door. And I think that for a kid like myself, grew up on the edge of a small town in rural West Tennessee, both my parents were public school teachers at a time when we were still integrating, still desegregating. I was born in 68, so in the 70s, we were still going through you know, that stuff wasn't over in 1954, whenever the Brown decision was. We were still going through the basics of, and my parents were outspoken. They never would have called themselves activists. That was a term I never heard till I was in law school, but they were actively a part of the community and the things that were going on. So when you're a little kid, you're watching those things, you're seeing your parents trying to make a positive difference. And then as life went on, I think that what happened with me in the Bay Area was, you know, I got burned out. You can help too much, and then you need help.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in trying to get healthy again that that's when I discovered all this green stuff and clean energy and all these positive things that were going on in the Bay Area. But none of them were going on in Oakland.
Mm.
None of them were going on in Bayview Hunters Point.
Yeah.
None of them were going on in Richmond. None of them were going on in the communities where I have been doing my work.
Yeah.
That was when my light bulb moment came. Mm. And I said, you know, we need to have green jobs and green opportunities for these young people. And then from there, it has just been a magical mystery tour. It's just been this incredible journey from West Oakland, you know, we had our youth program in literally a warehouse, corrugated steel, echoey noise, mice warehouse, you know, in 2004, 2005. To the White House. It's just a testament to something great about this country, something great about Barack Obama, and something great about being willing to dream.
So what were some of the sacrifices you think you had to make to get to in this phase of your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now I'm 40. When I was younger, there was a lot of sacrifice involved because I felt driven. I was like, look at all these negative things happening. I do something about it. I felt driven. At this stage of my life, I don't feel driven. I feel called, you know? It's a different feeling. It doesn't, probably the same amount of work, maybe more work, but I'm motivated more by what I'm chasing after, what I want to see, not what I want to stop.
And so I think I can hold it a little bit lighter. I have two boys. My son Cabral is going to be 5. Mm-hmm. Machai is 10 months. So, you know, they keep it real.
So you have to go home and do that. So yeah. Is it hard actually balancing a family and this work?
You know, it's really hard. And I'll tell you, how it got harder because, you know, I moved out here by myself for the first 3 months. And, you know, my wife was struggling with the two boys at home and a full-time job and stuff like that. But I was here literally sometimes 18-hour, 16-hour, 20-hour days. Then when they came out and moved out, it was like, hey, great, Mr. White House man. You know, how about this house? You know, we don't have to. I'm like, diapers, dishes, what is this? You know, I was like it gone into some other reality, you know. And so it took us almost a week to kind of get resynced back up because I had gotten so used to, you know, almost like this monk-like existence of just work, work, work. But it's good to have that kind of a balance. And it's also good, again, for me, a year ago my father died. So I've seen both my sons born in the room, and I've seen my father died, only one in the room, with my dad. And, you know, I feel like I know what life is. You know, I've kind of seen the beginning and the end, and I kind of know where I am in that journey. At least I'd like to think I do. And, you know, it's short.
Yeah.
And not that many things ultimately wind up being meaningful. We spend a lot of time on a lot of stuff, but when it's all said and done, it's really just a few things that wind up being really meaningful. Your family, and then whatever contributions you can make to your community. And the rest of it kind of falls away. And so when I was there with my dad, I could tell him, you know, job well done, sir.
Mm, mm, mm.
Job well done. And I want my boys to be able to stand over me like that. You know, that's that keeps it in perspective.
Yeah. So the calling that you spoke of, what do you say to folks that don't necessarily believe that you can actually have that kind of calling, mm-hmm. you know, in this world? Because there are plenty that don't.
I tell you what, all those people who would say that, I would tell, you know, look at your journal, look at your diary 6 years ago. Yeah, you have the same, I need to do this in it. And then look 3 years ago, you have the same, I need to do this, the same thing. And look at your to-do list today. That's your calling. Every single person has that persistent dream, that persistent thing, and we push it to the side, we push it to the side, and it's not going to let you go. So you may as well step up to answer.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact everybody in this world, 6 billion of us, was born with a beautiful dream inside. Mm-hmm. And if we would all actualize those beautiful dreams, we have a planet beyond paradise. Barack Obama has shown that. I mean, Barack Obama 6 years ago was an unknown state senator, but he decided to go ahead and let his light shine. And I say all the time, it's not Barack Obama as president that is most powerful. It's Barack Obama as precedent. See?
Mm.
It's him as precedent.
Yeah.
He licenses us to be great.
Yes.
He licenses people around the world to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to get a chance to come here and be a part of what he's trying to do, I'm confident that if he just keeps shining his light mm-hmm. and the rest of us keep shining our light, that eventually we'll get out of this dark moment.
Van Jones is the new special advisor for green jobs at the White House.